Welcome to our innovation series. I'm talking today with Dan Ferris at Boston College's Rote Center for Catholic Education. He's the program director of the Executive Leadership Academy, and he's program director of the Board Development Institute, which we'll talk about today. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate the introduction.
Tell us, what is the Board Development Institute?
Let's get right to the purpose. The purpose of the Board Development Institute is to strengthen Catholic school governance at a time when many dioceses and networks are pulling back on governance, and two, to build better Catholic school boards. Catholic school offices are stretched, they're stretched thin, and schools, even parochial schools, are finding themselves more and more independent, often because they have an overworked pastor who, understandably, has two parishes or has a parish in another ministry that they're working on and can't give the board the kind of time that they would like to. Second purpose, really, build better boards. Formed boards have strategic direction. They increase the viability of Catholic schools and the sustainability of Catholic schools. So a real short history here. The Board Development Institute originated with the Healy Educational Foundation. The foundation supported board formation with resources for many years and started boards from the top up at Catholic schools. Now, the Healy Foundation has two mottos, and I like coming back to these for good reason. And you're going to hear this echoed throughout what I say today. First motto, for the future of Catholic schools. For the future of Catholic schools. Second motto, build a better board today. Build a better board today. So for many years, the Educational Foundation, the Healy Educational Foundation, worked with schools in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, Philly, Boston, St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Diocese of Allentown, Camden, and Wilmington, and I think a few other places. Then in 2023, Dean Healy, daughter of Healy Education Foundation, founder Bob Healy, awarded $2.5 million to the Rote Center for Catholic Education at Boston College, along with its learning tools, its resources, its know-how to establish a pre-K-12 Catholic school board formation program. Pre-K-12 Catholic school board formation program. My colleague and associate program director, Chris Martin, also came from the Healy Foundation. So since then, we've been able to take the board development work nationwide. The BDI is the only comprehensive board formation program for Catholic schools. A 7-month-a-year, 2-year program covering 15 learning experiences from mastering essential board practices to board dynamics to successfully achieving high-functioning boards. That's our promise for Catholic school boards.
I appreciate that history of the Institute. Let's hear a little history about you. Tell us about your background. How did you get into this work?
My background in all this, I have a long vocation in Catholic schools in 3 different dioceses and also experience with accreditation. I worked for 2 years for the New England Association of Schools and Colleges as the director of the Commission on Independent Schools. 54 independent schools, half of them are Catholic schools, and the other half are traditional boarding and day schools. And one of the interesting things about traditional boarding day schools is for many of these schools, they rise and fall on the strength of their boards. That was a big lesson for me, and it's one that I brought that. And I'm seeing the same thing today with Catholic schools, is that they're relying more and more on their boards. So in 2023, I came to Boston College to co-create and co-direct the Board Development Institute and its accompanying program for leadership development, the Executive Leadership Academy.
Some of our listeners are going to recognize the name of the Healy Foundation because they had 2 different occasions where Christine Healy and members of the foundation were involved in conversations here around the areas of governance and the Healy advancement model and also the unique value proposition mm-hmm. of things that might ring a bell for some of the areas where Healy had been engaged. And that was in as recently as 2022. So before this shift, and I remember Christine Healy telling me that they wanted to put those knowledge and Catholic school services in a university, a place that provides those kinds of things for schools.
Yes. I mean, I have to say, well, you'll never find a greater champion for board work, for institutional advancement in schools than Christine Healy. And, you know, she gets this from her father. Bob Healy was a lawyer by training, went through Catholic schools from like grade 1 all the way through, hugely successful businessman, wanted to give back to Catholic schools like so many people who've been formed by Catholic schools and know it was the essential formation of who they are as a person. And what he knew was business. He knew good business practices. And he said, you know, one of the things I can do with schools, I can help them build boards that are high-functioning boards. There's a need. I can do that. And they did it, and they did it very successfully. But the mission has continued, and that's what we're doing today with the Board Development Institute.
Oh, that's wonderful, and that's the mission that our schools desperately need, as well as we continue to carry out the educational mission of the church through Catholic education. We in the Diocese of Cleveland, we have 20 schools that educate in the high school grades. We have 80-some schools that educate the elementary grades. And our Keeping the Faith strategic plan is really focused on strengthening the system of elementary education. When we launched our strategic plan, about 60% of our elementary schools did not have any board. Most of them had some involvement of parents in a PTA, and about a third had some sort of advisory board. But again, most had no board. Tell us, what's the difference?
Let's start with a real clear distinction on the difference between school boards, whether advisory boards or boards of specified jurisdiction, and parent organizations, whether it's PTO, PSA, HSA, whatever you call it, right? So all boards have some operational aspects. So on a school board, you have a finance committee, for instance, and monthly it's going to monitor the school's budget and financial statements, or the entire board may deal with current issues as they arise. That's very operational part of a board. Parent boards, a PTO, for instance, has many operational aspects as well. But when we talk about boards and we talk about them in the Board Development Institute, we should be thinking about a board supporting the school's leadership with strategic direction, planning, and mission-driven actions that secure the future. So I just want to say that again. Supporting the school's leadership with strategic direction, planning, and mission-driven actions that secure the future. And that's going to include long-range financial planning, building and grounds, master planning, institutional advancement, philanthropic efforts. That's a very different organization from a parent organization involved in its children's experience and, say, a lot of transactional fundraising. A different vision, an appropriately nearsighted vision. And I don't say that negatively. The other, with a board that is providing leadership and direction and strategic vision for the future, is a farsighted board. It's less concerned with what's happening. It's not interested in so much in what's happening operationally in the school, and hopefully it's not going to step across that boundary into the operational nature of the school. Its vision is now out on the future. So if you look at a parent board or sometimes with an advisory board with that has a lot of parents on it, you know, it's about the 4 to 10 years that my children are in the school. You look at a strategic board, it's about the next 10 to 50 years of the school's growth and sustainability. One is about spending now. The other is about investing in the future of the school.
That's a helpful distinction. I hope we can tease out a little bit more of the places that have boards in our elementary schools. Again, a good number of them are advisory. Some otherwise do have specified jurisdiction or directors. And in order to be part of the Board Development Institute, does it matter what kind of board and why or why not?
It really doesn't matter, Frank, what kind of board comes to the BDI. However, generally speaking, you can develop a board of specified jurisdiction, a board of trustees, much more than you can develop an advisory board. Both can be highly effective and productive. And there's advisory boards, I'm sure, in the Cleveland Diocese and also all over the country that are strictly advisory boards that the way they were set up, maybe that's the way the bishop wants them. Maybe that's the pastor wants them. They can be highly effective and productive. And we can work with them in the Board Development Institute and we can give them best board practices. We can elevate them to what we call a high performing or a high functioning board. But here's the reality. All Catholic school boards rely on dedicated volunteers. All Catholic school boards rely on dedicated volunteers. Recruiting, sustaining, and engaging the advisory board volunteer members is just harder. It's a universal concern. An advisory board can offer the best and wisest advice, and the school leader or the pastor can simply leave it on the table. What does that say to the members? Some pastors and bishops will only allow advisory boards. That's fine. We respect that without question. We will work with any board of whatever kind they are, however they've been constituted. We'll take them as far as we can because we can do that. And that's our promise, is to take every board that enters in and say, look, here's the dynamic. Here's where we can go. It's structured out. It's systematic. Master this. We'll move you to this. Master that. We'll move you to the higher level.
That's a great example. In fact, from this diocese, we have some of our diocesan operated high schools. These are reporting directly to the bishop who are participating in the Board Development Institute this year. So exactly as you mentioned, they are advisory because that is the canonical structure we've chosen here in this diocese. But if they are high functioning the way that you described, that's an advisory board whose advice is always taken because it's on point. It's working hand in glove with the leadership of the school. If its committees are functioning the way high functioning boards should function, if the research and the advice and the counsel it delivers is top notch, then what school or what bishop wouldn't take the advice, right?
That's right. And Frank, they have the right people also on their boards. So that's also part of the Board Development Institute. Key piece is, how do you get the right people on your board so that you have those high functioning boards, so that you have committees that really work, you know, that know what they're doing?
And that's, I think we're starting to get into then how effective boards do operate. What are some of the things that board members and school leaders might expect to accomplish if they attend the Board Development Institute?
All right, let's start at a broad level. Green board essentials, which is mostly about board structures. It's also a weakness of many boards, even boards that have been around for a long time. There's some basic things that they're missing. I'll get a little more detail in just a second. Secondly, board dynamics, which is about the board as a team, the board having a culture of its own, which of course is aligned with the culture of the school, the vision of the school, the strategic direction of the school, its Catholic identity, its Catholic mission. And there's an emphasis here when we talk about board dynamics on the critical relationship between the board chair and the school leader. That has to be a very harmonious relationship. The pastor also is a third player in that as well. So we look at board dynamics. Then we look at the characteristics of high-functioning boards, which is that mission-driven future orientation I've spoken about, and the ability to move a board and with the school, move the school forward strategically. Little detail, okay, because I think this is essential. We cover the importance of current updated bylaws and adhering faithfully to them. Many schools haven't seen or used their bylaws in years. They wouldn't even know where to find them if you asked them. Not a best practice. We'll spend some time on that. We'll also talk about how you amend your board bylaws in sort of coherence or in harmony with the directives that you're receiving from the Catholic school office, perhaps from the chancellor, perhaps from the bishop, diocesan policy. Because we always want to stay very carefully within what canon law mandates or the policies of a diocese. Two, we cover maintaining an effective schedule of meetings and how to develop a well-crafted meeting agenda that's productive for the board and the school. So with a lot of boards, they use the same agenda pretty much every single meeting. It's a wonderful sleep-inducing agenda. Three, how to cultivate a trusting board. In other words, the necessity of building board relationships. Can't emphasize that enough. It's not just or not only the board chair and the head of school. It's also all the board members. They have to trust each other. They're typically going to come with different experiences. They're going to come with different perspectives. What they share in common is their Catholic faith or their love for Catholic education, but they may not share the same viewpoints. How do you build a board of trust so that they will listen to each other, that they will speak to each other, that they'll speak with each other, and in consensus, they can move a school forward? That's a really important trophy for every board to try to attain. Doesn't happen naturally. It doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of work. Four, we look at all the different kinds of board types, how decision-making works in each of these boards. We discuss three foundational committees that every single Catholic school board should have, whether they're advisory board of specified just jurisdiction, board of trustees, executive committee, governance committee, and finance committee. Executive committee, governance committee, and finance committee. We discuss what these committees do, how to form them if the school doesn't have them, how to create a charter for each of these. We talk about Catholic values and the faith life and Catholic identity of the school and how that can imbue board practices and governance. This is a really important aspect. How do you get board members to pray for that Catholic school every single day as part of their personal prayer? Really important. That's the responsibility. They should be doing that. But it's also, how do they stay on mission with the Catholic identity of the school? I've seen boards, and you probably have too, Frank, where the board is really about the school, the sort of the Catholic part. Well, you know, that's good. That's the principal can do that, or, you know, the president. That's kind of their job. But ours is about the institution, about the school. That's a wrong thinking, really wrong thinking, fundamentally wrong. No, the board is also about the Catholic mission. They have to live the mission. They have to exemplify the decisions. They have to exemplify the missions. They have to make decisions in concord with the Catholic faith and mission of the school. We spend a lot of time on board member recruitment and then the nomination process, including how to create a board recruitment matrix and achieve the necessary board diversity of time, talent, treasure, experience, expertise, and perspective. That's always kind of a monumental part of the Board Development Institute. Many folks in the Board Development Institute have never seen a board recruitment matrix. So it's kind of like, wow, this is really neat. This is going to shape how we bring people on the board going forward in the future. It's wonderful to see how that works. We do not encourage or advocate for the outdated representative collaborative board with the pastor, the principal, a couple of teachers, a few parents, a few parishioners, a few parish council members, somebody from the parish finance committee, a few community members. There was a place for those kind of boards, and we in many schools have those boards. That's not what we advocate for. We really look for, again, this kind of leadership board where you're bringing on the right time, talent, expertise, experience, and perspective. We delve into effective practices for board member onboarding and the year-long orientation process. If schools do not have a robust orientation process, including an onboarding process, they're going to create one in the Board Development Institute, and they're going to start implementing it. We focus on how boards, particularly the finance committee, can be very involved in measuring the school's financial performance and financial resiliency. It's one of the greatest contributions a board can bring to a school is having the right kind of people who understand finance, who understand entrepreneurship, who can help a school go through those rough times to think about the future, to build reserves, to create endowments, all these kind of things that a lot of school leaders simply have, they don't have the capacity for that, right? So that's, we work with that. That's year one of the Board Development Institute. Year two, we learn advanced formation for school boards. We look at the history of boards and the future of Catholic boards in the church and schools. We study why Catholic boards, Catholic school boards, are different from boards of other not-for-profit organizations and how they're similar to 53s, how they're different from corporate boards, public school education committees, and parent boards, like we mentioned earlier. This is about creating the proper expectation for board members. If all they're familiar with, and I've been to boards where the chair came out of public schools, he or she's experience is all about public school boards. Those are really different boards. Don't expect to be elected.
Yeah.
Don't expect to be reelected.
The different, right, political dynamic there.
Political dynamic. Don't expect to be the last voice in the hiring process. Don't expect to handle, you know, controversial topics that come up in the schools that, you know, parents come to the board meetings and explode about.
Yeah.
Most Catholic school boards do not have public sessions. That's just a matter of practice. We don't weigh in one way or the other on that. I mean, we have bylaws that actually include for public sessions for people to come. But don't expect you're going to be handling grievances. Don't expect you're really going to be doing it. Those belong in public schools. But that's not the nature of Catholic school boards. Really important for every board member to understand what kind of board they're on, what the history of that board is, how they're understood in the context of the church, and how they make their contribution. We dive into the functions of high-performing boards, and then strategic board leadership succession. On any board, the chair of the board is the most important person. You got to get the right chair because the right, really, he or she is really leading the leadership of the board,
yeah,
this external leadership team, right?
Yes.
So when it comes time for that person, the current leader, to roll off, what kind of process have you already put in place in terms of your bylaws, your policies, and your practices to ensure you have the right leader for the right time for the future of this board for the next 3 or 6 years, whatever it might be? We look at the role of the board in strategic enrollment management. We look at the role of the board in defining the school's brand and unique value proposition. Obviously, this is a process that all goes on internally in the school as well. We look at the board's role in philanthropy as ambassadors of goodwill and ambassadors of giving. We look at the board's role in capital campaigns. We look at the board's role in master campus planning, as well as facilities planning, safety, security, technology, infrastructure planning, and the role of the board in initiating or supporting, monitoring, strategic planning, and celebrating, leading the celebration of goals that are accomplished in that strategic plan. That's year two. That's a broad overview.
That is, yeah.
I just want to add, there's a couple other components here, and I think it's fair. We also run a monthly, what's called a Build a Better Board forum. We have discussions every month during this program for an hour, hour and a half. We also bring board experts into our discussions from other Catholic schools, sometimes from other not-for-profit organizations, charitable organizations, to talk about how they build their boards in these different areas. But monthly, we do what's called a Build a Better Board forum. It's really enjoyable. Any member of the Board Development Institute can come into the board forum and talk about their board, talk about a problem they're having, talk about a challenge they're having, talk about something they've just discovered that's working really, really well. I'll give you an example. Say he comes from one of your boards. The principal of the school said, you know, it seems like the majority of our board members are coming out of our finance committee. And so I asked her, this was during one of our cohort Zoom sessions, I said, well, why do you think that is? And she paused for a second and she said, well, you know, the finance committee meets every month. They meet regularly. And the members of the finance committee always have, they know what work they have to do. They know what they're responsible for. I said, that's right. You just found the model for creating engaged board members. And that's really it. If you bring somebody on, whatever their background is, don't just have them sit on the board, twiddle in their thumbs.
You value their input and you engage them regularly. And you're describing people who had come on just to serve in the finance capacity, but because they were engaged and grew in their leadership, they ended up joining the full board or taking on different roles in the board.
Right.
Perfect.
And it's just letting know what the expectation is. I was on a very large board one time. There were actually 70 people on this board. It was a not-for-profit of 501c3. And I remember the board chair, he said, and he really worked to make sure this was not the case, but he says, I have learned the number one reason that people disengage and leave a board, drop off a board, either at the end of the term or even before the end of the term, is because they don't feel valued.
Sure. And if the agenda is a snoozer, like you mentioned, I can see how those folks would maybe not feel valued, would not keep coming back. Yes.
Yeah, and it's not for ill will or anything like that, but they just feel like, listen, I'm a busy person.
Yes.
I have a lot of things to do. Nobody asked me my opinion at the meetings. I'm happy to, speak up, and I do that. But honestly, I don't know why I'm on this board. You sometimes hear that. Really, really not something you want to hear on any board.
And the more talented and valuable they are to the institution, probably the busier they are and the more demands they have on their time already.
Well, exactly. But, that's where when you invite them, if they say, look, I can't do this. I'm on three other boards. I'm really busy. Well, your response is, can we revisit this in a year? We really want you on the board. You have tremendous experience. It's the experience our school needs. So I'm going to contact you in the year. In fact, I might call you in 6 months and see where you're at then. But I want you to think about it. I'll tell you, 9 times out of 10, a year from now, they're going to say, I've been thinking about this for a long time. I just dropped off 2 of the 3 boards that I'm on. I am so excited to come on your board.
Yeah.
And you lay out the expectations. Here's the time commitment. You should never bring somebody on a board without telling them exactly what you're expecting of them. And then when you bring them on, have those expectations.
Yeah.
Keep them engaged. Keep them involved. Keep them in that mission.
Do what you said you're going to do.
Do what you're saying you do. They'll drive great satisfaction from it. You'll have a really strong board. I want to add one other thing. We also do board coaching. We do it on the kind of like when a board, if they don't want to come to the Build a Better Board forum, if they just, call us up or schedule a time and say, hey, Chris, hey, Dan, got a question about something that happened on my board. We do that. We also do some board orientations. We'll do board retreats and things like that. But again, there's a lot of people doing those kind of things. We're really about a comprehensive program.
Wonderful. And I mentioned in our diocese, there are the 20 high schools that all have their varying forms of boards already. One of the challenges here is that 60% of our elementary schools don't have a formal board structure right now. What if one of those schools or all those schools wanted to create one? How would you recommend they start? And can the Board Development Institute be of help to them?
Okay. Stay with me on this one. If a school needs to start a board, we absolutely can help that.
It's not the Future Board Institute, right? It's the Board Development Institute.
Yeah. But not most likely not within the board development as we have the program right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a school right now that is trying to reconstitute a board that's been inactive for a couple of years. They're starting at the inconceivable deficit. I mean, they're doing the best they can. We've got a couple of members that are in the Board Development Institute. They're doing the assignments. They're way behind. We love them. They have great enthusiasm. Realistically, they probably should go through the whole program over again. Having said that, we're more than willing to do a board development institute, a separate, just to get schools started. In other words, these are the basics. That's all we're going to cover. And we understand this takes time. Boards don't meet that frequently. Some meet quarterly, some meet every month. That's unusual. Some meet every other month. That's more common. It just takes a long time to build a board from scratch, to start from zero and get it up to 60 miles an hour. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a year. It's going to take 2 years. We're more than happy to create a cohort of just schools that either have boards that are not functional, barely functional, or want to start a brand new board. I do want to say, too, in all fairness, that the Board Development Institute is not for every school. And I say that because some schools are simply looking for a little extra. They're looking for the one-off. They're looking for the board series. That's fine. The Board Development Institute, comprehensive, systematic. It's a course of practice and principles. It's in-depth board formation. It requires study a couple hours a week going into the site that was developed with Boston College and our folks. Discussion, creation of board resources. It takes teamwork. It takes the expectation that a board's implementing these practices along the way. So just like when you bring somebody on a board, you want to be really clear. We want to be really clear too. The Board Development Development Institute is clearly transformative. We've seen it. But it's not for every school. On the other hand, if a board is serious, like the high schools you have in this year, then let's get them on board. Pun intended, by the way.
Yes. So tell us about the timeline then. If some of our listeners say, this sounds good for me or for my institution, and they want to sign up, what's the process and the timeline to join the next cohort of the Board Development Institute?
Well, Frank, you know, we'd love to have any of your schools. Board Development Institute, okay, monthly program, October to April for 2 years. October to April for 2 years. We do give a certificate after the first year, and that's like mastering a lot of the essentials, all having all the committees set up, having good charters, you know, really good functioning committees. The second year is, you know, as you heard me go through this, a lot of has to do with really strategic direction and a board as a leadership board. So that's really in the second year. We want people to come through the entire year, but we do give the certificate after the first. By exception, very strong, well-formed boards that are looking to be leadership boards, to be high-functioning, high-productive boards, will bring them into the second year. Again, that's by exception only. Registration just opened. Typically, it opens in April of the year. Registration is on the Roach Center website. So you go to the Boston College Roach Center for Catholic Education, go to Leadership Programs, Board Development Institute. The registration is there. There's a flyer about the program. Now, this is really important. I want to kind of finalize this or highlight this or underline this.
Yeah.
We have folks going through superintendents, network leaders, folks like that. Our preference, ideal candidates for the Board Development Institute is a team, head of school, president, principal, board chair of the governance committee, chair of the finance committee, and one or two other board members. So we really want to see a team. Why do we do that? It's really simple. You get one person who goes to a program, they come back, they're all excited, they got all these things. Good luck trying to implement that with all the rest of the people who didn't go.
You're right. No common language, no understanding.
Just no, they're not going to share your enthusiasm, passionate. Right?
Right.
So. We know the master was send them out two by two, you know?
Yes. Yes.
There's a reason for that kind of dynamic. We have that on the Board Development Institute. We've got board members. And the nice thing is they study together. When it's time to create things, like to create an orientation process, because the school has never had board orientation. And so they're creating this year-long process, meets four times, and different things are covered in each of the four sessions, which happen to coincide with the four board meetings. They cut this, the orientation is prior to that. They're working together to create, you know, to create these resources, to create this orientation program. Now we have templates, we have phenomenal resources, but it still has to be tailored to individual schools. So you got a team there. Okay. The cost is $599 per school leader or board member.
Okay.
Here's the good deal. $1,099 for a school leader and up to four members of their board.
So that is really incentivizing the team approach you just talked about, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
So registration, I mentioned it opens in April, but we've already opened it already. It's a built on a cohort model. So if the cohort is full, we can move to a second cohort, but I'd say don't try to register after August. I mean, you know, if you really want to be part of it, spring is the time to register, because it's now that we're building the cohort. And we can handle a pretty good sized cohort, because one of the things we do is the learnings is asynchronous. You log in to the, you know, the site with the learning experiences. But the cohort sessions are discussions, and we also look at case studies on boards, what boards are doing right, but what boards are doing not so good. Best practices, worst practices. We offer those at different times of the day. Like we'll offer a morning session, afternoon session to work around people's schedules. And then also because we have people from New England to Guam currently in the cohorts, so having a couple times during the day. But we don't want those, we don't want to get too big, because we won't have the right kind of discussions, because board members learn from other board members, principals learn from other principals, presidents learn from other presidents. And that has to take place in a fairly reasonable sized cohort. Last thing I want to mention, Healy Board of Excellence Award. When a board has a simple majority of their board members, whether they have 10 members or 50 members on the board, when you have more than half of your board members trained through the BDI, you'll be recognized by the Roach Center as a Healy Board of Excellence. And that's, I think that's a really important designation. We have boards right now that are very excited moving in that direction. So I want to return to the purpose. Again, the purpose is we're really trying to support the governance of Catholic schools, even if you don't have a governing board. Most advisory boards are typically not governance. But we know that right now boards are increasing. Boards of specified jurisdiction are increasing. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that boards are feeling more and more sort of independent, or less attended to by their Catholic school offices, not a criticism, it's just a reality. Pastors who can't give the board the attention they would like to. And they're shifting their understanding away from the kind of representative board that they've had in the past. You know, that was kind of an old practice, been around for a long time. Schools now, you sometimes with elementary schools, and this is probably true, you may have no more administrators, no more leaders in the school other than the principal. So whereas you maybe once you had a vice principal, maybe you had a dean of students or something like that, those kind of positions are gone now. And that principal is expected to do all of those jobs, wear all of those hats, have all of those competencies. It's too much. Is there any reason why, you know, they burn out? Of course they do. Principals who allow a board to be an external leadership board for them, to guide, to create the strategic plan with them, to implement the strategic plan, to monitor the goals and the achievement of the goals, to do facility planning, to do infrastructure, technology infrastructure planning, to do financial monitoring and planning, to create a 3 to 5 year financial plan. I mean, that's just invaluable. So that's really why the Board Development Institute was created. And to our model, build a better board today.
Thank you. That reflects our root belief that collaboration is a force multiplier, that these principals who are wearing 30 different hats, they shouldn't have to do it all by themselves. And this is one more way that we can invite ladies' involvement in schools and help strengthen the Catholic schools under whatever governance model is currently existing. That's fantastic. But if you're a school leader in our diocese or some other listening to this now and you think, yeah, that sounds like my board. We could probably use some refreshing. We don't know where the bylaws are. We're not functioning the way Dan's describing. But maybe that leader is the only one thinking this way. What advice do you have for that person to get the rest of the board on board with improving its capacity and improving its performance?
Yeah, and especially the board law, the bylaws thing is a really important question. And we want to be very, very respectful of dioceses and the direction they've received from their bishops with diocesan lawyer in terms of bylaws. So for advisory boards, and this is kind of important to, I mean, we talk about this a lot, but for advisory boards, they are not governing boards. The bylaws, although they are modeled after the bylaws of a 501c3, a not-for-profit organization, or for a diocesan committee or something like that, they're not legal bylaws. They're not legally binding bylaws. They're really just, they're guidelines. They're good guidelines. And what we want to see is that those bylaws, whatever it takes to unearth those bylaws and dust them off and you know, take a look at them. And then, you know, try and find somewhere, when were they last, you know, either updated, revised? And then we provide a lot of guidance here. We also have templates of different kinds of bylaws. But we want them to work. You should work with the diocese, work with your office, for instance, and say, you know, are these the bylaws you want us to have? Okay. And if you say, well, you know, you're sure those are fine, those are good, you know, that's great. Then they're ready to go. If you say, gee, these are really old and you know, you're doing, they call for things. Like some advisory boards, just a real quick example, a lot of advisory boards have extensive articles about how voting takes place. The advisory board never takes a vote. They haven't taken a vote in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, why do you have this voting process, you know, and identifying, you know, who can vote, who can't vote, when you have a quorum, those kind of things. So we like to say, look, if you've got bylaws that are not relevant, that are not up to date, let's talk about how, first of all, you can get those up to date and make them applicable or relevant to what you're doing. Now, if you have board of specified jurisdiction, board of trustees, that definitely either has to go through the canon law of a congregation or an order-sponsored school, or it has to go through, should go through the canon lawyer at the diocese or whoever's in charge of those kind of things. But we can help with that. So that's really good. And that's your model. And you start building from that. So I say that's in a lot of ways we say that's the foundation. That's why it's the very first learning experience we talk about is find those bylaws and look at them and are they applicable? Are they relevant? Do they need to be amended? Do they need to be updated so that you can start out and then make a commitment to follow your bylaws? And where the rub comes in, Frank, and there's two things. One is that, and this is a kind of controversial area. We don't take sides on this, but parents on boards are somewhat controversial. Mm-hmm. If you have a representative board, you're absolutely going to have parents. And the question is, do your bylaws call for parents? You know, they may mandate that you have parents. Then you got to ask, is that really the best thing to do? Or do we need to should they be updated? We have other boards who say, well, we've learned over the years for the kind of board we have that you can only have what we call accidental parents. In other words, they're not on because they're parents.
Mm-hmm.
They're on because they bring a particular talent. Okay. Mom's a CPA. She's a CPA on the board first. The fact that she's a mom, she's got to kind of sit on that, I mean, that's got to stay in the background. Don't bring that up. Don't talk about your daughter. Don't talk about your son with a learning disability who's not getting the help he needs in the school. Okay? That's how. That's a no-fly zone.
It's a different conversation, right? Yeah, that's not the board's
purview. But where it becomes important is, if depending on what you're trying to do with your board, if you want a leadership board, a strategic board, one that's providing direction to the school, you know, you got to grapple with that question of, do you want parents on the board? Again, parents are going to look in. They're going to look up what's going on today. Leadership board's going to look to the future. So that could be codified in the bylaws. Another big area that causes a lot of problems. Term limits.
Yes.
A lot of boards ignore their bylaws. They don't even care about them. They just hold their meetings. And why do they do that? Real simple answer. It's because they've always done it.
And when you've got a great talent who's committed to your institution because they're a graduate or because they have some community relationship, you may have a hard time parting with them, right? But there's a fairness issue there in overall governance and fairness to the opposite. When you've
fresh
got
blood. New people.
Be able to, yes, and fresh
and the board's
blood.
Not where it used to be 5 years ago.
Yes.
You know, so you need different people. The problem is that, you know, a lot of boards, they bring people on and they have good boards. They ignore their bylaws because they've got sort of a custom and they get really cozy with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a problem until that board chair is now in his 17th year. And the board chair that came on the board 17 years ago and became the chair of the board 10 years ago is not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, is really difficult to work with, doesn't share with the board, doesn't consult with the board on what should be important topics. And now you've got the governance committee and they're looking at the bylaws and going, well, he should have been off the board 9 years ago.
We haven't followed any of this.
And what are you going to do now?
Yes.
What are you going to do now? You can't. You're not going to get him off the board if he doesn't want to go.
Can't suddenly start to follow the rules,
right?
When you've ignored them for a long time. Yes.
So you know, best practices with boards is if you have bylaws, yeah, have a governance committee that kind of like owns the bylaws, reviews them on an annual basis, keeps them updated, moves for amendments when necessary. But the important thing is follow the bylaws.
Yes. Yeah.
Follow the bylaws.
Hold the board accountable.
Best practice.
Yes. Great. That is wonderful advice, especially if someone's thinking that their board needs a little bit of a reboot, they should start locally with what their bylaws say and draw that to the attention of the board and then maybe build some momentum there then, right?
Right. I do want to say, you know, creating a cohort of startups, board startups is not a bad idea. You know, it's like anything, you know, you start the way you want to end, right? So if you, you know, don't handle your racket the proper way, if you don't hold the bat the right way, you know, if somebody doesn't really teach you how to play pickleball or play the piano, I don't care what it is, right?
You form some bad habits early on,
bad
right?
Habits early, and boards do that. They form very bad habits early on. And then they kind of own those bad habits and they're hard to break, like any bad habit.
So we need to be very thoughtful and deliberate in creating, inviting, structuring initial boards, and then need some real expertise to walk us through all those steps and thinking through all those pieces in order to create and launch meaningful boards to support these Catholic schools. Well, thank you. Is there anything else that our people should need to know about?
I didn't mention this, but we've been very careful to make sure it's a very Catholic program. So like every time somebody logs into the learning program, the first thing they do, start with a prayer. And we have all these prayers that can be used in board meetings. So it's like you start with a prayer, your own prayer. But
great
modeling. By the way, here's a little resource for you too. We keep it Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And in a talent-based board, not everybody's talent may be their faith life either. So you bring somebody for their fundraising expertise or their legal acumen, and they may grow spiritually as a result of being involved with this board too, right? Wonderful. Well, I am so grateful for you taking the time to explain the Board Development Institute to me and to our listeners here. It's been a wonderful resource for the schools that are already participating for our diocese, and I really look forward to sharing the word and hopefully inviting many more to come check it out and participate.
We'd love to have that, Frank, really.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you for sharing of your time, your expertise, and your leadership for boards for Catholic schools throughout the country. Thank you, and God bless.